The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, we've got so much to cover with the two full rounds played since our last episode. How have you managed to keep up with it all?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I've got through it just about. I mean, it's definitely been, as Dan was saying, kind of chaos energy J-League, and that's just the FC Tokyo result. So how are you bearing up more is more the question.
Well, yeah, after last Wednesday, as we're going to touch on with our first guest in just a moment, yeah, I wasn't in a particularly good mental state. And yeah, when Tokyo fell behind on Sunday night in the fourth minute, I thought, well, let's, deja vu all over again. But yeah, thankfully for me, not so much for our second guest coming up later. Tokyo turned the tide, as we'll get to, as I say, later on. But for now, we will welcome in our first guest, who is no doubt Cock-a-Hoop. After two big Kawasaki wins, took them top of the table. It's Neil Debnam. Neil, welcome back to the podcast. It has been a while. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, and thanks for inviting me back, especially in the circumstances. But yeah, I thought I'd never be invited again, but especially, obviously, you didn't read my blog post. So. No, it was fine. I was, yeah, it wasn't so bad. I just tried to poke a little fun, maybe, at FC Tokyo. And it's not really my normal style. I would normally not like to jinx anything, but yeah, sorry, Wednesday. I just had to say something really soon.
No, fair enough. If you can't say anything after a 4-0 away win, then when can you, I suppose? And I did actually get around to reading it, Neil. So, yeah, no hard feelings at all. Don't worry about that. And, yeah, you're fully entitled to bask, as I say, in the glory of a victory like that. And it has been a very fruitful 7 days for Kawasaki. As I say, they're now top of the pile, level on 10 points with Urawa, but ahead on goal difference. And, yeah, 7 goals scored with just the one in reply, a consolation for Kashiwa with about half an hour to go on Saturday night. But, yeah, it's always great to speak to you, obviously, but one of the main reasons we wanted to have you on, and our second guest later on, Stuart Woodward, is that you were actually at the game on Saturday night, and I've got a bunch of questions, and I know that Sam has as well, about the experience as a whole. Obviously, we don't want to take anything away from the Kawasaki performances, but, yeah, just the actual feeling of being in the ground on Saturday night. Was it difficult to get a ticket? Well, yeah, I'll start with that, and then we can ask all the other myriad questions we've got along the way.
In theory, yes, because 5,000 capacity is like about a fifth of what we normally get. I mean, obviously, some of that is away fans, away support of varying sizes. We are season ticket holders, or we had a season ticket at the start of the year. They're obviously now cancelled. And season ticket holders got priority. But I think for Frontale, there's a lot of season ticket holders, as far as I can guess. I mean, I don't know any figures, but the sort of the different queues that we have for going in, season ticket holders are allowed in 30 minutes early normally. And 30 minutes early, there's a lot of people there already. So we had that extra day or so. I'm not sure exactly how much advance opportunity we had to get the tickets. And to be honest, I can't give you many details because my wife is the ticket master or the ticket mistress. I don't know. And she's done the business. It didn't seem too difficult. We had tickets in our usual section, which is normally the most highly in demand section. That doesn't really sound very very good, but it's normally the one that sells out first. And it did sell out pretty fast, but I feel it was probably easier to get a ticket for this game if you're a season ticket holder than it would be for like Kashiwa away or something like that, where you've really got to be on it and you've got to have like 3 different devices going and also be standing next to a machine in a convenience store or something. So, I mean, I'd like to take some credit for that, but the credit's got to go entirely to my wife. And she also managed to bag us a couple of those summer edition shirts on whenever that was, last Thursday. So she's really on the ball at the moment. So, yeah, congratulations to her and thanks to her as well. But, yeah, I didn't know anybody else who got a ticket. So maybe that says something. But there were a few familiar faces in there. I don't think any of the other foreign fans are season ticket holders. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not 100% sure. And none of them were there. But there were a few people who sort of sit around us normally who I spotted. But because of the way it was entirely allocated seating, of course, people who you normally would be sitting near might be sitting on the other side of the stadium. And yeah, for once, sort of every area was equally full. Normally, there's some sort of less exciting corners of the main stand where the tickets are more expensive that aren't quite so full. But yeah, it looked all right, to be honest. I know Alan had a nice picture of the end of the Cerezo stadium with like everybody sitting in the perfect spots. And I think we did the same thing. I think I don't see anyone sitting in the wrong seat. There was the two seat gaps between everybody. Every other row was empty. And yeah, it looked all right. They encouraged us to bring any sort of spare shirts we had and put them on the other seats. So yeah, it was quite fun. I had a couple of Naras on the seats next to me, which of course I'm still upset about. But, it seemed to go pretty smoothly, I have to say.
Was there a general enthusiasm from the season ticket holders to get back to the stadium, or did you find that there were pockets where were quite anxious to going back to stadiums? I know we've seen a few grounds with just maybe a couple of thousand, not necessarily the full 5,000. So what kind of were your experiences on that?
I think, I don't know if it's because it's Kawasaki instead of Tokyo. I mean, there's no difference really. Obviously people will get very offended by people saying that, but sort of on a Corona point of view, there's not really any difference between Kawasaki, Yokohama, Chiba, Saitama, Tokyo, because they're all just one big mess of people who are traveling across prefectural lines all the time anyway. So I'd say that, where was I going with that? But basically, what I was trying to say is that I feel like there seemed to be quite a lot of enthusiasm. I mean, I think our official attendance was 4,700, but there were no tickets available. So I don't know how that works out. Maybe does the 5,000 include press, or I don't know how it works out. But or people didn't turn up. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, maybe they got cold feet at the last minute, but it sold out. So I'd say there was definitely enthusiasm there. And I don't know, I mean, sort of on a wider societal note, that it does seem that whatever happens with these figures, there does seem to be a sort of, I don't know really how to say it, but the Japanese public seems to be slightly, not blasé is not the right word, but the situation here has got a little worse, I guess. But still, when you compare it to other countries, we don't have so much to worry about. And I think that's probably reflected in not how seriously Japanese people are taking it. I don't want to talk for a whole nation, but it certainly feels like there's a lot of people just living their normal lives wearing a mask at the moment. So I think from the point of view of people not wanting to attend, I think that was probably a tiny proportion of the regular 25,000. And I think they'll have no problem selling out 5,000 for the next game and then 10,000 for the game after. I think people want to go, basically, is what I'm saying. Okay. I could have said that in three words, but I decided to use 3,000 instead.
Well, so I think I know the answer to the next question, but I've been posing it to people in the build-up to firstly the league returning, and then finding out that fans would be allowed in from this past weekend. So, I mean, clearly there wasn't really any trepidation from yourself or your wife. Well, you're able to go, so your wife got your tickets pretty much as soon as she could, so you could get into the first game. So, as you say, people are basically living their normal lives with a mask on. So, you're able to go to the football, so you're very happy to go.
Yeah, I guess there's this kind of weird sort of like suspension of belief kind of thing, that when I'm sitting at home watching TV, I'll be saying, oh, this is awful, and oh, these people should be more responsible. But then when it comes to the fact that I'm a bit bored at home and there's a game on, which I don't normally miss them. So that kind of thing that, oh, it's other people are acting irresponsibly, and then perhaps I could be accused of acting irresponsibly by going. But to be honest, I think, I mean, me and my wife discussed this as well, that we said the bigger danger probably is going on the metro in the morning to work, or going to the game even, is probably more dangerous than actually being in the stadium. And the fact that like hundreds of thousands of people are commuting to and from work every day, it's weird. I sort of feel like I have sort of some kind of moral not integrity perhaps when I think about certain things that I obviously won't do. But then when everybody around you is sort of behaving as if everything's fine, it does sort of rub off somehow. So we weren't really worried about going. I guess the one thing we thought about going would be that we probably wanted to just try one of these like limited capacity games, because we thought it would be, well, pretty rubbish really. And the experience was actually quite different, and I think we both agreed that we'd like to go again if we can. I don't know, I've come out of this sounding a bit weird, that it's a concern, but you know, we're wearing a mask all the time. I'm not touching anything or anyone on any train or anything at the station. It's like this, I guess we all walk around in some kind of bubble now, and like my hands have been sanitized almost to the bone. So it's that kind of thing, that when so many other potentially more hazardous things are going on, it sort of weakens your resolve when you think, maybe I shouldn't do this. I'm putting a bit of a downer on this whole situation. But basically, we didn't really worry too much about it, because, I mean, at the end of the day, I suppose, cliches are all coming out today. At the end of the day, we trust the government sometimes, and we don't trust the government other times, and we trust the government when it suits us. So if the government says it's okay and the J-League says it's okay, I trust them.
Okay, well, getting on to the kind of atmosphere of the game then, once you were there, how was it, even with the spaced out things, and did you make enough use of the towel that everyone seemed to be given?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before about us thinking we'd only want to go to one, that was mainly because of the ultimate buzzkill laws or regulations that they'd put in place. No singing, no shouting, no towel waving, no rhythmic clapping. And it seemed like it was going to be pretty, pretty dull, to be honest. And it wasn't really. I mean, I said this in my blog post, but I quite like the fact that we weren't piping in crowd noise even when there was nobody there, because that sounds weird, I think. But then when I caught a few of the games yesterday with the sort of the waves of applause, that sounds weird as well. But it didn't sound as weird when you're in the stadium. It kind of there was something kind of almost like I was a bit drunk somehow. I felt like I'd been drugged or something. That it was just like everything was happening around me, and it was like quite a nice experience somehow. It's like, oh, that was a nice tackle. I'll just give you a little clap. And it was a really sort of slightly surreal experience, but actually quite fun. And at the end of the game, we said, what do you reckon, next game? Yeah, I think so. So I like the fact that we didn't play like pipe in crowd noise or pipe in songs, apart from when we scored and the Kawasaki City song before the game. I think it could really get overdone if people tried to play. I mean, I don't think anyone did that this weekend, did they? Do either of you remember? Was anyone piping in extra noise. I guess we've got no way of knowing, really. But I'm pleased they left it sort of au naturel. It wasn't so bad. I quite enjoyed it. It was a different experience, and I think in the blog post I compared it to like halfway between a cricket or a tennis match and a fireworks display. That it was just like clapping and the occasional ooh, and like when the goals went in, there was like a bit of noise, but nothing too outrageous. But yeah, they managed to make an atmosphere. So, I mean, obviously, it's not the kind of atmosphere that drives on the home team and reduces the opposition to a quivering wreck. But yeah, it's more like just a sort of a pat on the back for everyone involved. So, a few people have said we applauded the Kashua goal, and they thought we were great for that. But I think it was more that kind of thing where, you know, if your team's concedes a goal whilst you're singing a song, you like sing it louder to say, come on, guys, don't worry about it. We can do this. So I feel like that doesn't quite translate as well into sort of a mild ripple of applause when the opposition score. But I think on the whole, it was pretty fun. I don't know how it would work if there was opposition fans. And I don't really think, if I was an opposition fan, I don't really think I'd want to go to the game, but I said that about the home game. So I don't know. I feel like with two opposing sets of fans, quite a lot of the experience will be gone.
It sounds like it'd just be a giant clapping contest, Neil, between two sets of fans.
Yeah, but not really. Please, you know, you can clap a little rhythmically, but you've got to have someone in there who's not very musical to break up the rhythm. But actually, I have to say, I wasn't aware of that rule. So maybe people were giving me a bad, what's it, the skunk eye, I think they say. Because maybe you know that at corners we do this, let's go, clap, clap, let's go thing. And some wag decided to try and start recreating that in clapping form. And apparently that is highly frowned upon. So you can't clap a song instead of singing a song because it might encourage people to sing, which I can kind of see. And that song also has some arm waving involved. So, you know, the less movement, the better. But it seems all right to do that kind of thing, you know, when you go to a concert and you're hoping for an encore and everybody's like clapping slowly, faster and faster and faster and louder. So we seem to be allowed to do that at a corner, but not the let's go clapping rhythm. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I'm sure there's a reason for all these rules. And when Kobe at the start of the season didn't allow people to sing, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing in the world, but well, a lot's changed, hasn't it, in 5 months, and now everything seems kind of different. And now, if someone was singing, it'd be like, "Oh my God, what are you doing? You're going to kill all of us!"
Indeed.
So, yeah, it's like it's amazing how fast the level of your tolerance for certain things changes. So, I'm basically, in answer to your question, which I've forgotten, yes.
Indeed. All right. Well, so yeah, you've got one more chance for a 5,000 capacity limited to Todoroki in the match day 7, Neil, before it all opens up again. And stadiums can expand to a 50% capacity. So obviously that'll still be a much lower crowd than normal at Todoroki. And obviously, yeah, there'll probably still be the same limits on the chanting and clapping, etc., rhythmic clapping, of course, etc., etc. I tell you, just one thing before we actually have to talk about the two games, of course. But yeah, I mean, did you really pick up when you're in the stadium the pinging of the ball around? That's one of the things I've really picked up on the TV. It's just obviously you don't hear that in a typical J League game because there's singing and chanting for 90 minutes. But yeah, just the way the ball pings off the players' boots when they're obviously knocking it around. Was that something you could really pick up, like echoing off the stands there?
Yeah, definitely. And so players talking and shouting to each other was quite interesting to hear because, I mean, there was lots of little ripples of applause, as I said, but for the most part, it was like a pass and then just, you know, if a good pass or something, or a nice turn or something like that. So there were periods when it was silent, really, and you could hear, like, the insects, what are they called, the semi, in the sort of the bit next to the stadium, which is pretty amazing that you think that this is like a pretty big deal sport in Japan, and you're at a game and you can hear like people chatting to each other on the field and insects behind you with 5,000 other people there. But that was pretty weird. And I've just remembered I actually made a recording of the match atmosphere, an audio recording. But I haven't listened to it. But I think, yeah, you could definitely hear that kind of boot on ball and, like, I'd like to say I could hear the ball hitting the back of the net, but, of course, that's an absolute lie. But I heard Oniki shouting at a player. And, I mean, to be honest, I think maybe I probably haven't said this to you before, but me and Oniki, we have a complicated relationship, and I really want to like him, but sometimes he does things that I don't agree with, and I mean, he's obviously a better manager than I am. I mean, 100%, I haven't got a clue what I'm talking about, but kind of the more I hear and see him in games, the more I like him. And when we had some fancy VIP tickets, thanks to a guy in the local bar we go to after the game, we were right behind the dugout, and Oniki was getting really angry at the referee. And I was like, good on you, I like you. And then when he's like shouting like instructions across the pitch to Hatate Reo, I was like, good on you, Oniki. So, I mean, of course, it's easy to say at the moment that I like him a lot, but yeah, we've got a complicated relationship. But
yes, we are aware, most definitely. All right, well, yeah, this has been a very fruitful week for Frontale, of course. So, Sam, last Wednesday night, it was a demolition job in the first half, 4-0 at halftime. Somehow FC Tokyo limited the damage in the second half. But once again, Frontale have rocked up to Ajinomoto Stadium and absolutely run the place. What can you say about, you have to give massive credit to Frontale, of course, for their the way they dominated the first half. But yeah, Tokyo, in their first home game of the season, absolutely crapped the bed.
I'm amazed you're bringing it up, to be honest. But yeah, it was a horror show, really, for Tokyo. Kawasaki were on it from the first whistle. I think Tokyo had made a couple of changes. I think Nakamura especially struggled in that game defensively. There are a lot of crosses from wide areas that maybe he wasn't picking up the man at the far post. And yeah, just as Tokyo, yeah, weren't on it. Kawasaki really just eased to the 3 or 4-0 as it was at the time. And then the second half was a fairly non-event. And it was, yeah, really professional performance from Kawasaki. They sort of did the same against Kashua. And when you're playing these sorts of games, three games in a week, you want a game where you can almost take the foot off the pedal in the last half an hour. And that's what Kawasaki have managed to do. And yeah, really impressive performances this week from Frontale.
Indeed, Neil. So, yeah, 3 goals in 11 minutes from Oshima, Leandro and Tatsuya Hasegawa. Had you guys 3-0 up by the time half an hour was played. And then, Hasegawa doubled his fun just before half time. So, you must have been absolutely in dreamland. And you must have been disappointed you weren't able to be there to see it yourself.
Yeah, but in a way, maybe it's a good thing because, I mean, well, in a way, maybe it's a good thing. Not that I'm not there, but I think maybe the break has helped us. I know it sounds stupid, but we always start slowly. And maybe this year we won't start slowly because we've had like 3 months to not have any games. So normally like that, I guess that first game against Sagan Tosu was a kick up the backside. And then maybe Kashima's game showed that I think we deserved to win it, but I think we weren't very good. But yeah, you're right. We played much better on Wednesday, and it's a shame not to be there. But it's a shame not to be there. I can't make any silver lining out of that not being there. But it was nice to watch it on TV anyway. And I don't know what's happened to Hasegawa. Something's happened to him in the off season because he seems like a monster now he's back. I mean, a small monster, but. I mean, what was it? What would they call it? They called it a roulette against jumping ahead to the other game. Sorry, but he did that kind of thing. I don't even know what we call it in English when you sort of stand on the ball and sort of pirouette round to sort of beat a player. And they called it a roulette on Japanese TV. Maybe we call it. I don't know. But yeah, he's really come on, Sonny. Damiao's getting it together. Because maybe he's getting minutes, and I think I've got to give Oniki credit for that. I can't remember who scored against Kashima, but in that game, it would have been all too easy to drag off Damiao after like 60 minutes as the first change that Oniki always does. But he's given him time on the pitch, and we've got other players. We've got like an absolute squad full of strikers or attacking players. So it's kind of a miracle that he's started three games and played most of three games. So I don't know when the rotation starts or I don't know what's going to happen. But he seems to like a changed guy as well. And it was good that he got the... now I'm jumping to the other game again. But when we played Kashima, that peach of a finish into his own net from the corner... Mm. was like almost exactly mirrored against Kashiwa. So it's good, you know, if you can practice scoring goals in the wrong end in a game that you win anyway, it's nice to get that practice out of the way. But yeah, we look pretty good. I'm can't really say anything else, and I'm worried about jinxing, but so far we've looked pretty good, and there seems to be confidence in the team, and it seems to be fun again. We're scoring a lot of goals, as you said. And, I mean, the one we conceded against Kashima, we scored ourselves. Kashima, yeah. Jesus, these names. And Kashiwa, the one we conceded against Kashiwa, just... I mean, maybe it was the fact that we were 3-0 up, but I sort of put it down to, okay, never mind. You know, accidents happen kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know what's happened. We just... turned the midfield triangle upside down, and it seems like everything's gone absolutely haywire. So, it's good at the moment, but I realise I've diverted a lot from the question again. Sorry.
No, you're right, because, yeah, we were going to come on to talk about Saturday night, obviously, and, yeah, a 3-1 home win over Kashiwa Reysol. For them, that was their second 3-1 defeat of the week after they were stunned at home on Wednesday night by Yokohama FC, a very efficient Yokohama FC side who won 3-1 despite registering a total of just 4 shots over the 90 minutes. So, Sam, they were obviously a sleeper pick for many to finish in the top 6, if not even higher, Reysol. But, yeah, I guess in complete contrast to Frontale, the opening day win over Sapporo seems like years ago now because, they've slumped to 3 straight defeats. And, Nelsinho will be hoping against hope, it seems, that, yeah, he'll be able to turn it around quick smart.
Yeah, he was pretty furious with the performance in midweek against Yokohama, and you'd have thought there'd have been a reaction, but there wasn't. And it's weird, they're completely opposite, as you say, from the team that opened the season. I think maybe, if I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt, it's because Cristiano's not there. I mean, he's the catalyst of their attack. He has so much confidence, and that rubs off onto the rest of the players. And it's not really there at the moment, and that's where Kashiwa have to be confident, because defensively they're not great. They have very good goalkeepers, but the defence in front of them will leak goals, and Kashiwa, if they're going to win games, they're going to be having to have that policy of we'll score one more than you. And at the moment, it's not looking like way. The three games they've played really have not been good enough. They didn't offer anything against Tokyo last week. Yeah, as you say, against Yokohama FC, despite having a lot more of the ball, but didn't really look too threatening. And even this one, the goal they score is a bit of a scramble across the box. I think Jung maybe should have dealt with it better, and it's a tap-in from Goya. But yeah, otherwise, they've not really looked on it. Alunga doesn't look like the player that would score 8 goals in a game last season, or the player indeed from the Sapporo game. So maybe once they can get Cristiano back, that gives them that impetus going forward. But yeah, they're making my prediction of them finishing fourth look a bit stupid at the moment. But yeah, with games coming so thick and fast, they can easily turn that around. And hopefully for their sake, a game against Shonan will be one that they can build confidence in.
I kind of got the impression that in the first half, they were playing for a draw or like a breakaway counterattack. Snatch a 1-0 win, that they really didn't seem that interesting going forward. Just as far as I could tell anyway, it just seemed to be like Olunga was just kind of hanging around the centre circle, but most of the time they were all behind the ball. And I mean, maybe that has something to do with our result on Wednesday, but I was pretty surprised. And yeah, like you said, this is will the real Kashiwa stand up? Is it this one, or is it the really team who were pretty dull and ineffective against us, or is it the opening day team? But yeah, like you say, one player missing is a big miss for them. But you can't depend on one player, can you? I suppose so.
Indeed. Well, yeah, on last week's episode, Daniel Hartman was wondering where Hiroto Goya was. Well, he's bobbed up with both of Riesel's goals in the past week. Started and scored their equaliser against the Yokohama FC before they went on to lose 3-1. And then, yeah, he grabbed the consolation, 11 minutes into the second half here. But by that time, of course, Frontale were already 3-0 up and home and host. So, you've mentioned Damiao Neil and Hasegawa as well. I guess he's, after his early exploits, he's probably a lot of people's candidate for breakout player of the season. We've seen it in flashes from him over the last year or two. But, yeah, at least at the start of the season, he has begun red hot. And while you're keeping Ryota Oshima upright, fit and firing, then, I think you have every right to feel confident about going ahead. The game's coming up in the coming weeks, especially with all those names that I've mentioned, but also 2018 player of the season Akihiro Iyanaga impressing in the early stages of the season. He's already got 2 or 3 assists to his name, and he bagged the opening 2 goals against Reysol in 2 minutes just before half time. A header from close range after a corner was flicked on by Ataru Esaka, of course, for the opposition team, and then a banging first time drive from inside the D. So yeah, all those names that I've mentioned, Iyanaga, if he's back to somewhat approaching his best, he could just about be the most important of all of them for you this year.
Yeah, definitely, because we've got a bit of experience missing from the squad due to injury at the moment, and Iyanaga's definitely stepping up. And I guess when we rotated those middle three in the last match, because previous to that we played the same starting 11 for the first 3 matches. I mean, one of them was in February, so. But when we changed, I think on Wednesday, no, hang on, what day is it? On Saturday, we changed Kurumaya, Noburi Sato and Kurumaya, and changed 2 of the middle three, Tanaka and Oshima, both dropped to the bench, and Shimoda and, oh Jesus, who was it?
Morita.
Yeah. How embarrassing. Cut that out. I was a bit confused that was the change that had been made, and not maybe Iyanaga or Hasegawa given a rest, because they're quite important. But then thinking about it, yeah, Iyanaga is he's the veteran in that team now, I suppose. He's the experienced guy. He's done quite a lot of things before. So, yeah, maybe his inclusion for like 60, 65 minutes a game is pretty important right now. And, Yeah, I do like him, I have to admit. I think he's got quite a lovable character, and he's quite irritable with the irritable in that he gets irritated quite easily by the opposition and does a little strop sometimes, which I have to say I quite like. He's quite a human player, I think, underneath the cool veneer. But yeah, I think there's a, I mean, Tanaka hasn't done a great deal so far this season, I think, but I mean, that's good for me in a way, because I think if he does too much, he'll go somewhere else. And all the young kids that we were promised so much from haven't really had much of a chance to shine too much yet, because I think Mitoma was sick, not injured. He was ill, hopefully, presumably not coronavirus, because we probably would have heard about that. Hatate's had a few chances from the bench, but still seems very, very raw. But there's clearly a great player in there, but he hasn't quite done it yet. So, and Miyashiro's only had a few minutes, but you know, he's looked all right. But the talk before the season, where they were saying that this year it would be the year of Mitoma, Hatate, Miyashiro, the old guard would be removed. I mean, maybe it still will be, sort of in that we have to rotate a lot. But yeah, there's a lot of players that are stepping up who I might not have expected to step up. So, yeah, I think at the moment I've got some kind of reverse jinx going. You know, I love a jinx and a reverse jinx. That against Tokyo, I turned to my wife and said to her, Yamane hasn't done much. He hasn't really impressed me yet so far. I mean, he's fine, but he hasn't really impressed me. And then he does that kind of step over thing and beats three players and crosses the ball for Damiá to back heel in. And then on Saturday night, I said, why is Wakizaka still taking the set pieces and then goal from a corner? So, yeah, I don't know who I'm going to spur into action in the next game. I'll wait and see, but it's encouraging that our attacking players are playing so well, because we've potentially got problems at the back now, because Jessiel was injured in that Kashiwa game, and we've only got two centre-backs in our squad who aren't Jessiel, so three centre-backs. And if Jessiel's injured for any time, that's Taniguchi will play with probably Yamamura or Kurumaya, neither of whom are really centre-backs, or Kamiya, who's a kid. And yeah, it did seem a little bit of a worry coming into the season, but a 16-minute injury makes that slightly more concerning. But I mean, hopefully it's not serious. He walked off the pitch. He wasn't stretchered off, but hopefully it was more of a precaution than anything. But if there's any problems coming, I suspect they'll be at that end of the pitch rather than the front, if that makes sense.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, so happy days for Frontale. And, well, at least on paper, a decent chance that they will continue until the league opens up in match day 8, because you've got, well, a couple of Kanagawa derbies on the slate to come, Neil, and obviously we know anything can happen in a derby. The form book goes out the window, etc., etc. But, yeah, it's a Yokohama FC away this coming Saturday before a trip up to Sendai in match day 6. And, yeah, the home Kanagawa derby against Shonan in match day 7, as I say before. Things open up and, yeah, you can start travelling all over the country again. But, well, yeah, it's really interesting to hear about what it was like to be there in person at Todoroki. Yeah, congratulations again on the romping victory at Ajinomoto Stadium last Wednesday. And, indeed, yeah, Frontale's unbeaten start to the season. How long that will continue? Well, we'll wait and see. Hopefully you haven't jinxed anything by yet appearing on the pod this week. But, yeah, I think we'll leave it there for now. Always great to chat with you. And, yeah, look forward to doing so again soon.
Thanks a lot for having me, especially under the circumstances. The J-League fans, the foreign J-League fans always seem unreasonably nice. So it's great to have such a nice bunch of people.
Yeah, great to speak with you again. And, yeah, after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will be back to chat about Urawa's win over Kashima. All right, always great to catch up with Neil. And before we chat with Stuart Woodward, a check on the other team who are on 10 points, so level with Frontale, but the trailing them on goal difference, and that is Urawa Reds, of course, after their 1-0 home win over Kashima on Sunday night. They followed up Wednesday's 2-1 away win at Sendai to remain unbeaten on the season. The only goal of the game, Sam, came as 7 minutes into the second half. A cheeky back heel from Ewerton was enough to seal all the 3 points for Reds, continue their productive start to the season, and perhaps more alarmingly, regular top six occupants, Kashima Antlers, are now rooted to the bottom of the table.
Yeah, very weird for Kashima especially, but Reds will be happy with the points they've managed to accrue over this period. I don't think they've played particularly well when you compare them to Kawasaki, for example. Like in midweek, Sendai were the better team for large periods of that game, but Reds' quality showed through, and then in this game, very little happened. I mean, Kashima were lifeless. Urawa just had a little bit of quality. Yamanaka's balls in from the left were quite good. It was his ball that initially started this goal for Everton. And yeah, really nice flick for them. So it's probably good for Reds that they're not playing particularly well, but are eking out results, which definitely wouldn't have happened last season. And then, yeah, just thankfully for them, they're not Kashima, who were... This is their worst performance of the season, and they haven't played well at all, really, since the resumption and even in that first game against Sanfrecce.
Indeed. So, yeah, we mentioned that Reds won away at Sendai on Wednesday night. Well, Antlers, obviously, they haven't got any points to speak of yet. And last Wednesday, they were stung early and late by Sapporo in a 2-0 home defeat. So... when you couple it, of course, with the ACL playoff loss to Melbourne Victory as well, Sam, to say it's an underwhelming start to the season is a massive understatement for Antlers. So we had a question come through from Johnny Nicol regarding Antlers. Johnny asks, would their problems be solved simply by changing manager, or do you think the issues lie a bit deeper?
Oh, definitely deeper. First of all, I wouldn't have actually got rid of Go Oiwa. I don't see why... the change needed to be made, but once you've made the change, this was always going to be a transitional period for Kashima. They made so many new signings in the winter. They brought in a lot of young players, Hirose, Sugioka, Nagato, really decent J-League players, but they all have to mesh together, and they haven't really had the time. I know there's been a lot of time in terms of months or whatnot, but I don't think they will have been on the training ground necessarily as much as they'd have liked. They'd still got to get used to the way that Zago wants them to play, and he's brought in Brazilians like Everaldo and Alana, who may not have had enough time to kind of integrate into the squad, get used to the culture in Japan. It's obviously been a weird time for them, so I think, no, I wouldn't make a decision just to change the manager right now. You've got to see it through, I think. It helps them that there's not really going to be in danger of relegation at all anyway, I wouldn't have thought, but this season there's absolutely no chance of that with that being taken away. So I just think it needs to give him more time, try and get used to this system, get the players used to playing for a team like Kashima. They've all come from, with the greatest respect to them in most cases, lesser clubs or weaker clubs that not have the same expectations that Kashima do. So I think, yeah, maybe we'll see where they stand in a couple of months' time. But at the moment, it's not good for Kashima at all. But there are enough quality players in that squad that once they start clicking, they should then bring themselves into a more respectable league position.
Yeah, well, the Antlers faithful will definitely be hoping that that is the case. But yeah, it certainly makes for grim reading at the moment. Played 4, lost 4. Goals scored 1, goals conceded 8. To say that's un-Antlers-like is a massive understatement. The most successful club in the history of the J-League, of course, but I don't think they've ever gotten off to a start as poor as this, although I stand to be corrected, although I can't imagine it has ever happened before. All right, well, happy days for Reds, as it is indeed for Frontale. They are a point clear of Cerezo Osaka and FC Tokyo atop the table after 4 rounds. Very early doors, of course. But you've got to play the games, and they've done the business so far. No questions asked. All right, well, we got Neil's perspective on his Saturday evening at Todoroki. Coming up next, we'll be speaking to Stuart Woodward, who is at the Nissan Stadium. Stadium on Sunday night for Yokohama F. Marinos hosting FC Tokyo. Next, let's welcome in Stuart Woodward for an eyewitness account of goings-on at the Nissan Stadium on Sunday night. Stuart, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Not very well, thank you. Keeping well.
That's great. Very good to hear. All right, well, we're going to throw in a bit of a bonus on-the-spot clip of audio here, live in inverted commas, from the stadium on Sunday night. So, yeah, do you just want to set the scene about what's going to be coming up for the listeners in a sec?
Yes, I met Sean and some of my other friends outside the stadium, and I just recorded a little piece chat with Sean about what we could see and what was around us.
All right, so here's Stuart and Sean Galbraith for 5 minutes or so outside the Nissan Stadium on Sunday night.
So I'm here outside Nissan Stadium with Sean.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
So we're looking out onto the main concourse where all of the food trucks and the entertainment usually is. And it looks like a fairly normal day.
Yeah, I posted a few pictures on Twitter and it looks pretty much the way it used to look, right? I'm assuming, what time is it now? It's like, how long to go?
6:30 now, so it's an hour before the match. And I got here just before 6, and there were more people outside, and then people are just going in and getting their seats, because right now it's reserved seating only, so there's no need to queue. Only 5,000 people in the stadium, but still, you know, there's a lot of people here, and as far as I can see, everybody who's not eating or drinking is wearing a mask.
Yeah, that's right. I think I haven't noticed anybody who's going to... Well, you need to get in, right? You need a mask, or they won't let you in the stadium, right? So that's probably the reason.
Well, that's true. That's true. So we need a mask to go in, and then also we'll have our temperature checked quickly, I guess, on the way in.
But yeah. I mean, it looks like more people here than a Wednesday night League Cup game. It looks like early Emperor's Cup game or something like that. It doesn't look like some kind of strange 5,000 limited game at all, does it?
Yeah, I think you might say that there's fewer people than normal, but it doesn't look like less people outside than normal.
But yeah. I'm interested to see what the atmosphere is like, though, because I watched the Kawasaki game yesterday, and actually the applause sounded pretty good. I don't know if they put the speakers near the stands or something. But.
Yeah, but I remember, like, last year our core leader was saying, please clap, even though you're singing, and if there's something going good, something going well, then please clap as well. So I think it's always been the policy to clap, but... If that's all you can do, then it's a lot more noticeable, I guess.
Yeah, right. But I wonder, I mean, yesterday at Todoroki, what's the capacity of Todoroki? It's like 30,000 or something, maybe?
Yeah.
And that's 5,000 spread out across that. I mean, Nissan's, what, 70,000?
Right,
5,000 people spread out, that's a lot more space, right? So maybe it might not be as noticeable as a smaller stadium.
That's true, yeah. I think we've got one more match this month, haven't we?
Yokohama.
Yeah, Yokohama FC, and that's also in Nissan Stadium.
Right.
So with 5,000 limited.
No away supporters, right?
Yeah, no away supporters.
That's a bit of a shame. I mean, it'd be nice if a different game was chosen, but I mean, not much we can do.
Well, yeah, they play off all the local derbies and then see what happens.
Right.
But when it gets going next month... we'll be at 50% capacity, which is 30,000, which is probably more than enough for all of our usual fans to get in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone who wants a ticket will have a problem getting one there.
Well, that's true. I think there'll be less people wanting tickets, but but spread out over the stadium in the same reserved seating,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
But I mean, I wonder, like, what they can do at the stadium and as a club is to have the spaced out seating and... people leave at different times, but the train station, there's only two kind of major trains. There's a small train station and there's Shin-Yokohama station, right? So 30,000 people going into that station at one time seems a bit dodgy, to be honest.
Yeah, Yep. Well, but I don't think it's, well, I don't know. Yeah, 30,000. I think we'll probably get about 10, 15,000,
yeah,
maybe.
That's standard, yeah, right?
That's a standard.
On a good day last year, we got, what, 20, 25, right?
Yeah.
So, probably a bit less, yeah.
It won't be worse than the morning commute.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might stick to the Shinkansen for a while, though.
Right, yeah, that is the option in Shin Yokohama if you're coming from Tokyo.
Right.
Yeah. Very good option. Well, I think we'll wind it up, and I'll see what happens after the match. You know, maybe we'll hook up after the match and see what we thought about it.
Yeah, if we win, right?
Otherwise, we'll be slinking off home without saying anything.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yes.
All right, well, that was a terrific, Stuart. Thanks very much for taking the time to do that, and indeed to Sean as well. Very good to hear from him again. Well, yeah, you guys mentioned right at the end there that you might be back on after the game if you had have won. And, well, unfortunately for you, but for my sanity, after Tokyo's 4-0 loss on Wednesday, it couldn't have gone any worse on Sunday night, although after 4 minutes I thought it was going to. But, it just wasn't Yokohama's night in the end, was it?
No, it wasn't, and Sean ran away very quickly after the match, so I didn't manage to catch up with him to discuss it at all.
Fair enough then. All right, understandable. Yes, I'm never at my best after a Tokyo defeat, and obviously Wednesday was very much a shock to the system. So, from my perspective, obviously wrapped with the response from the team on Sunday night, as I say, especially after going behind in just the fourth minute. I mean, you guys were coming off your first win of the season at Mitsuzawa against the Shonan on Wednesday night. So, I don't know, you obviously would have been heading into this game on Sunday with slightly more confidence. Obviously, the first couple of games hadn't gone as you would have wished. But, I don't know, did you feel that the team might have been starting to turn a corner on Wednesday night? Or do you, I don't know what put words in your mouth, but you certainly didn't have it all your own way against Shonan. But to come out of that with a victory, I guess you would have hoped that was the start of better times.
Yeah, I thought that we just might have taken some inspiration from the Shonan match. But like the Shonan match very much was turned around with the substitutions. Then this time, most of the substitutes were on at the start, Amajun, for example. And when Keita Endo scored very quickly, I thought that might be our happy night, and we could see a few more in that light. But that didn't really work out as well as as we thought it would.
Just one more on last Wednesday, Stuart, and Sam, you can jump in here as well. I mean, it was the first time that Ange Postecoglou was ever able to field Marcos Junior, Edgar Junior, Eric, and Terohito Nakagawa in the same starting 11. So, I mean, surely no more lethal group of forwards in the league than that. And, I mean, that's enough to strike fear into any opposition fan. How did you think they performed as a group? And, Sam, I'd like you to get your thoughts on that as well, on Wednesday night. Ange rang the changes on Sunday. But as an experiment, putting those four on the pitch together for the first time, how did you think they clicked?
Well, I'm a little bit worried about the consistency, because like in the run-up in the end of last year, we had quite a consistent team for several matches, and things seem to click with that team. What we have right now is, especially with the rotations going on, a belief in the system, and that everybody can play in the system as well as anybody else. So it doesn't really matter who is coming on and at what time. It should all click together. And with the Shonan game, I was a bit more convinced when the substitutes came on, as I said before, that things just looked a lot better at that point. This time, I didn't really think it came together so well, obviously, with the results. But looking back on the stats, what really let us down is just the shots going in the goal, really. So I think as Ange Postecoglou said after the match. You know, he was quite happy with the first half, how they played the football, but obviously they didn't get the result that they wanted. But it's almost like a glut of good players. You know, which one do you choose, and in what combination? And I think that might be something that he'll be playing with as the season goes on.
Yeah, I was just on those four players that you mentioned. I was quite disappointed with the way they linked up. Obviously, four very good individual players, but that doesn't always make the right balance. And as Stuart said, it was only when the subs came on that they kind of took the game on. Amano, I think, was fantastic when he came on. He scored a fantastic goal as well. But yeah, the key players, I don't think Marcos Junior has really come back from the break particularly well. He's not really been that link-up that we had last season. And I think it is going to be this chop and change that is going to affect Marinos. They haven't really got into a rhythm of play at the moment, and there were changes again against Tokyo. Akida, I think, was the big change, where not having him marshalling in front of the defence leaves them really exposed. But yeah, these attackers, no one really stood out for me. That can happen, I suppose, when you've got such good players all think, oh, they've got to be the one that takes it on, and maybe the link-up wasn't quite there. And yeah, it was a little bit surprising, but it was good to see the substitutes, the Anayo and Amano, as I mentioned, Mizunuma, kind of take up the mantle, which you're going to need, because in this, the way that the season's going to be, no one's going to be able to maintain form, like individual players, for any length of time, really, just due to tiredness. So to have those sorts of players come in and do well is a bonus. But yeah, those players, none of them really have hit the straps of last season. And of course, it's understandable given the circumstances leading into this resumption. And I'm sure with the quality that they have, they will do. And maybe it was just not their night on Wednesday.
Yes, indeed. So it's actually, Teruhito Nakagawa, of course, the reigning J-League player, J1 player of the year. It's his brother, Hiroto, who threatened to steal the show when he put Belmare ahead 7 minutes into the second half. But as both Sam and Stuart have mentioned, yeah, Jun Amano came off the bench, bagged a quick-fire brace, and a fellow sub, Ado Anobu, won it at, about 3 minutes left with a header. So, yeah, first win of the season for Yokohama F. Marinos, and they headed into Sunday night's home clash against FC Tokyo. You would presume with confidence on the upswing. Tokyo, of course, in complete contrast after getting battered and played off the park in the first half of the Classico on Wednesday night. Of course, Tokyo returning to the scene of the crime, well, the scene of the triumph for Yokohama, the final day of last season, of course, when Yokohama swept aside Tokyo 3-0 to seal that first J1 title in 15 seasons. And, as I've mentioned a couple of times already on the podcast, I most definitely feared the worst when Keita Endo put Yokohama into a fourth-minute lead. But, I don't know, Sam. This game swung on a couple of major incidents, and the first of them was a very unfortunate injury to Kyosuke Tagawa that led to Leandro coming off the bench. So the incident led to Tokyo levelling from the spot through Diego Oliveira. But Tagawa was upended in the box by Thiago Martins as he raced on to Seimuroya's cross. Unfortunately for Tagawa, he landed very awkwardly. At first, I wasn't sure he might have broken his wrist, but then perhaps a shoulder injury, a dislocation, I'm not sure. It's certainly the theme of the injuries at FC Tokyo at the moment after Kensuke Nagai's rickety shoulder. But, Tagawa forced off. That meant Leandro had to come on. So once Tokyo were level in the 17th minute, things were fairly level in the game, I think, fairly even in the game. And then, on the stroke of half-time, a Tokyo free kick 20 yards out, up stepped said Leandro, and he stroked a peach across Yuji Kajikawa to send Tokyo into the sheds ahead.
Yeah, it was an interesting first half, and that Tagawa opportunity was the first of many of the game where you'd break quite quickly, and then the kind of Marinos defence would be turned round and completely out of position. It was a weird little foul, really, from Thiago Martins. He's completely not in the right position at all, and brings him down. And really unfortunate for Tagawa. Hopefully, it's not a major setback for him. It did look like a nasty shoulder injury. But in terms of the Tokyo as a whole, it was almost a blessing in disguise because it brought Leandro on. He was key with both the second and third goals, and you had a fantastic game. The kind of free kick was brought about by another ball and a quick counter, and the goalkeeper's caught out and then just kind of rugby tackles Diego Oliveira down. And it was another one where it was kind of more Marinos from 2018, it would have been just a little bit all over the place, and I think that had to do with the lack of protection they were getting in front. They brought back Thiago Martins, which was it's definitely a boost for their defence because they'd missed him the previous two games, but just a little bit all over the place, but then nothing that Kajikawa could have done with the free kick. Terrific one. It's one way, usually when you go the keeper's side of the wall, you expect the keeper to save it, but it was so well positioned and hit with such force, there was no chance for the goalkeeper. And yeah, really well-deserved goal for Tokyo, I thought, because I, like you and many others, thought at 1-0, 4-0, 4 minutes in, this is going to be one of those days again for Tokyo after midweek. But the fight that they showed and the kind of the introduction of Nagai really helped the way they were going to play, and it looked like Hasegawa got his tactics spot on and it brought them back into the game. And yeah, they were probably just edged the game, I'd have said.
All right, well, I want to get some more thoughts from Stuart, Sam, but I probably should ask this next question to you as well, because obviously Stuart saw the game with red, white and blue glasses on, and I saw them through red and blue glasses. So either of those major incidents, Martins hacking down Tagawa and then, yeah, Kajikawa racing out of his box to upend Diego Oliveira, are either of those F. Marinos players lucky to stay off the on the pitch, or was the yellow card the correct decision in both of those instances, do you think?
I mean, they were lucky in the sense that the two tackles were not really tackles. They weren't attempts to get the ball. But both times, I think they were just about rescued by a defender being further back, and just it wasn't necessarily a clear goal-scoring opportunity. I think Kajikawa is the most lucky because there is just a retreating defender and he's completely out of the picture. So I would not have been surprised if Kajikawa was sent off, but I think Thiago Martins was just about okay with the yellow.
All right, fair enough then. Well, you can feel free to weigh in with your thoughts on those two major incidents, Stuart, if you like. But, I mean, yeah, I guess you would have been disappointed that, once Tokyo had gotten level 17 minutes in, that there wasn't a bit more cut and thrust from your side for the remainder of the first half. I mean, as we mentioned, there were a lot of changes from Ange Postecoglou to the starting 11 from Wednesday night. But as we've said, I mean, a lot of the players who were in this starting 11 were the subs that did well off the bench on Wednesday. So you might have hoped for a little bit more from them in the first half. And then, indeed, as we're going to come on to, after Tokyo had gone 3-1 ahead.
Yeah, I think, as you say, the incidents really turned the game. Like Thiago's foul, and I looked at that on the slow motion over and over today, just to be able to say it was outside the box or that he didn't touch him. But it was just such a borderline thing, but not a very nice tackle at that point. So you could hear the players, remonstrating to the referee about, what about a card? What about a card? And it was so loud. And, you're not usually able to hear that level of conversation that a chuckle went around the stadium when at one point when people were asking about, like the players shouting for a card. And it could easily have been so, but I think this would have been a kind of a double jeopardy, wouldn't it, if you get both a penalty and a sending off. I think they cut down on those kind of double penalties, and I think that the penalty might have just spooked them a little bit. And if the end of the first half had ended without the second goal, then maybe the third goal might not have gone either. And so the whole those incidents, I think, really soured the game. And I felt that Marinos had a good game, apart from not getting the score, because they played until the very last minute. And even when you get to the 85th minute, like can still live in hope that it could be a draw, because we've seen that in the past before, and there's enough time, but you know, it just didn't make it in the end. But I thoroughly enjoyed the match on both sides, and I thought quite actually this time it was quite a rough game on both sides, really. There were quite a few kind of unnecessary kind of rough tackles. But then, like the previous game was pretty rough too, the Shonan one, and I think that was more with Shonan wanting just to, you know, make an impact, you know, with to put the game on their footing a bit more. So it was a bit disappointing that we didn't get it in anything, but definitely, and especially the third goal, that was just out of the blue, and you know, a good goal, but I think that really sealed it there. There's no hope after that.
Well, yeah, good goal. I tell you what, Stuart, an absolute thing of beauty, if you don't mind me saying so myself as an FC Togo supporter. Yeah, I mean, so Leandro, he's basically bagged a brace in 2 minutes, yeah, either side of half-time. I mean, basically from the restart, Akihiro Hayashi has punted upfield. Kensuke Nagai's has held off Shinosuke Hatanaka, flicked the ball forward, and then from deep on the right has swept over across that Leandro has, thumped home. A sensational half volley without breaking stride. An absolutely, sublime effort. Amazing technique, and we know he's got that in his locker, and absolutely brought that out for display. The free kick, and then, that half volley was absolutely terrific as well. Before, Sam, I said to me this game swung on two major incidents, and I haven't gotten to the second one yet. The first one was Tagawa being forced off and Leandro coming on, and the second one was in the 52nd minute when Kota Mizunuma swept over across from the right, as he was for the first Yokohama goal. Seimuroya was nowhere, and Nikita Endo missed an empty net from 6 yards. 7 minutes into the second half, if Yokohama make it 3-2, then it's absolutely game on as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I didn't feel safe in the 85th minute when Tokyo were 3-1 up. So how bad my nerves would have been if it was 3-2 7 minutes into the second half, I wouldn't be able to describe it to you. But, yeah, for me, that was the second key incident in the game, and Endo missing the target and reprieving Muroya played a huge part in Tokyo ultimately going on and winning the game fairly comfortably.
I think if Endo scores that, I think Yokohama go on to win the game. I think, yeah, you're right in saying it was an absolutely vital moment, and really one he should have taken. Maroya, again, was, completely caught on his heels. I think it was a poor day for right-backs, actually, because I think Koike was a bit off it for the Leandro goal. He wasn't really paying attention to Leandro's run. But, yeah, Maroya not paying attention to Endo, really, really good chance. I mean, especially with the confidence he would have got from scoring earlier, you back him to put that away, and, yeah, he missed it. And then, yeah, Yokohama still created chances, as you said. I think Nakagawa had a really good chance as well a little bit later on, which he fluffed his lines as well. So that's the difference. Yokohama not quite on it with their finishing. On another day, they could have run out maybe even comfortable victors in this game. But Tokyo took their chances, and Yokohama did not. And Endo, he'll be thinking about that one tonight.
Most definitely. And one more, Sam. You mentioned Hotaka Nakamura, and he rightly took some stick for his disappointing display in the Clásico. So it was a big call from Kenta Hasegawa to put him in again against the defending champions, this time at left-back in place of Ryoya Ogawa. While he was culpable for quite a bit that went wrong for Tokyo in the first half of the Clásico, I think, from my perspective anyway, he went some way towards redeeming himself with a fairly assured display at left-back on Sunday night.
Yeah, much more polished performance. I think he's made it into the DAZN team of the week, which doesn't always mean anything, but I think on this night he was, much more assured in his position. A really good call, I think, from Hasegawa to give him the confidence to go again. I think you have to do that with a young player, because they're going to have poor games or make mistakes, but if you think you've got the backing of the manager, then it really gives him a confidence boost. And I thought, he put in a really assured performance, so, good on him.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, Stuart, we've kind of gone in the opposite way than our chat with Neil in part one, where we began that by talking extensively about the atmosphere inside Todoroki on Saturday night, and then going on to talk about the Frontale's two results from the week towards the end of our chat. Well, in this regard, we've begun with the F. Marinos' two games from this past week, but we got a sense, obviously, of the flavour outside the stadium from your chat with Sean that we played earlier on for the listeners. So, once you're inside, obviously a vastly different experience from what you're used to at a typical J-League game with the singing and chanting for 90 straight minutes. But, how was the experience as a whole for you? Getting to watch your team while only about 4,500 other people were in the ground.
Yes, it was quite surprising, actually, because, you know, when we got up to the front gate, they had the temperature checkers there, and they're the gun type that can check you at a distance. So it only took half a second to have the temperature checked and walk in. As I said in the previously, the quite a lot of people I think just went in early, and I was hanging about outside and went in about 30 minutes before the match started. But the biggest impression was going, through the little tunnel onto the seating area. It was so quiet, and there were so many people there that it was just really, really kind of hushed. It was a little bit that like the feeling, when you go to a match and they have the 1 minute silence, and there's just so many people there, but there's no sound, and maybe there's a small kid, crying or something in the distance or something like that. And it really felt like that. Once the game started, and as the warm up, people were clapping, and paying very close attention to the players shooting at goal, practicing and things like that. So a lot of clapping went on, but it was quite a nice atmosphere, actually, with just only the clapping, and people were expressing their support in that way. Now, especially on the on our side, there were people a little bit getting a little bit frustrated towards the end of the match, and I heard a few quite loud shouts and when there was a goal it was quite noisy. You could hear a little bit of talking and people's shouts and things through there. But as a way of supporting, I think it was quite pleasurable. I did hear at one point where somebody or some group of people tried to kick off a more coordinated clapping, which would be in line with the it was the same clapping as one of the chants that has clapping that kind of starts off that way, and so I was wondering whether that was actually legal by the rules, I was actually wondering whether clapping at first was going to be allowed, even though it had been going on in other matches. But I think if you can't sing, then clap, and I wonder if people will start this coordinated clapping.
Well, yes, they have started it. They started it on Saturday night at Todoroki, because Neil mentioned that they were people were trying to get the same kind of thing started there. So that's it looks like it's going to be a thing.
Okay, well, maybe I'll have to get the call leader one of those big pair of foam hands, so he can have a very big hands to signify his clapping or something, instead of his megaphone.
Do the club put on any measures at all to kind of monitor this? Is there like an anti-fun police that's stationed in each section to stop any proper rhythmic chanting or clapping or anything like that?
No, not at all. And that's something I also thought, I wondered whether somebody would say, to the whoever was shouting at one point, whether the fun police would come over and talk to him. But I didn't see anything. There was actually quite a reduced security kind of steward contingent there. There was almost nothing, and it was a lot freer than I expected. It was a lot, as I said, a lot easier to go into the stadium. No hassle. It was nothing at all really different, apart from people like wearing masks most of the time. But you know, people were eating their bentos, people were drinking, you know, drinks that they'd bottles of things. And the only thing that wasn't allowed was the sale of alcohol in the stadium, but people were drinking outside, and I wouldn't be surprised if some people were drinking inside as well. So it was quite fun, really. You know, the nothing holding you back, or wasn't very controlled in any way.
Is it one of those things that you were happy to go and experience once, and you're going to wait until things open up again, Stuart? Or are you hoping to go as often as you can get tickets for games while they're at limited capacity? I guess, well, until the end of this month, until we're back at 50% capacity, which means pretty much anybody who wants to go to the Nissan can.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's going to be, I don't know. Like, I might go to the next match, which is the Yokohama FC derby match at Nissan Stadium. I think that might be the tickets might sell out more quickly for that match, especially like people have seen, you know, how it is. So I forgot to mention that I was sitting totally alone. I didn't know anybody around me, even though I'd met friends outside. We'd all bought tickets at different times, and I hadn't actually made the supporter seats, which were sold out when I tried to buy. So I was on the backstand, a little bit near the corner, which was a much nicer place to watch the match than I usually watch it from. So that was a little bit of an interesting new experience of Nissan Stadium, watching from the backstand for me. I'll definitely be watching the figures, and I think if the figures go up in Tokyo, they may have second thoughts about reintroducing such large numbers. But on the other hand, from what the evidence suggests, the virus might be less kind of spreadable in a well ventilated area. So, you know, keeping distance outside with a breeze, and also humidity levels do play a difference in these kind of viral spreads as well. So I think what the J League might do is to look, and if there has been cases where it's obviously traced back to a stadium, then I'm sure it'll all be wound back and rethought. But it's an experiment in a way, really. I think they won't know until they try it, and if it goes well, it will continue to go well, and if something happens, then it will be shut down. So I wouldn't be so keen at 50% in Mitsuzawa, because that's pretty crowded anyway.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, so Yokohama have Kashima away next Saturday before the home Yokohama derby against Yokohama FC the following Wednesday. So a couple of interesting looking games on paper as F Marinos look to get their season up and running. Nobody's gloating about your boys being in the bottom six after four games, Stuart, because we're all perfectly aware of the firepower that Ange Postecoglou has at his disposal. And, obviously, as a Tokyo supporter, I'm well aware of it, as you were swept to the title last season. So, for now, it's been really interesting to get your thoughts on Sunday night, what it was like to be there. And, glad that you were able to share it with us. And, thanks to Sean Galbraith for his contribution as well. So, terrific to catch up with you, and look forward to doing so again soon.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. And be back into the swing of things. I hope it continues, and we have a good rest of the season.
Indeed. All right, well, after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will round up the rest of the match day for Slate. All right, thanks again to Stuart and Sean, of course. Next, let's move on to Cerezo Osaka, who suffered their first defeat of the season on Sunday at home against Nagoya. I was all set to lead the episode, Sam, with Cerezo. Of course, they were the only team left with an unblemished record after Wednesday night's match day three. They had won 2-0 at home over Shimizu there, and with another home game on the slate against the Nagoya, yeah, I was expecting them to do the business. But no, Grampus, they turned up to the Yanmar and, 1-2-0. Mate Jonic's own goal 7 minutes before half-time handed Grampus the lead. And then Hiroyuki Abe, former Frontale man, of course, well, he basically sent his former team to the top of the table by sealing Nagoya's victory just past the hour. So, a little slip up here from Cerezo, Sam, but I don't know, is the biggest story Nagoya here? Because, they're up to fifth, and, with two wins and two draws from four games, considering how poorly they played their last season, they might be starting to defy expectations already.
I think we do have to give Nagoya credit. They're not playing as exciting a brand of football as I'd like and what they're probably capable of with the players in their squad, but they're definitely getting results. And usually, in the last few years, their defence has been a little bit all over the place, but they seem to have rectified that. I don't think there was a great deal in this game. I thought it was pretty even until a mistake from Kim and Jonic. Kim misses it when it comes in from a corner and goes in off Jonic. I think they tried to give the goal to Zhao Schmidt, which would have been particularly generous. But yeah, I think the game kind of flipped on that. And then Cerezo aren't a team that really like to come from behind. And Nagoya, the way that Ficodenti wants them to play, they kind of would want to be 1-0 up and defend that. And they've got enough quality about them going forward that really brought about the second goal. And Inagaki with a nice kind of somewhat lazy-looking assist where he just stands there and allows Abe to come through. And then Abe took his goal really well. And that was kind of the difference between the two sides, that the kind of mistake at one end and then the little bit of quality at the other end. So, yeah, good on Nagoya. They are going well at the start of this campaign. And when you look at the players on paper, there's with them, Mateus, with Solma, with Schmidt, Inagaki, Abe, lots of good players going forward. So if Ficodenti can get that defence right and the way that he wants them to operate, then, yeah, they're going to be one of these teams that will continue to nick results.
Most definitely, and yes, a fine 25-yard strike from Abe it was indeed to wrap up the win for Grampus. It was an Osaka double for Grampus last week. They took on Gamba on Wednesday at home and were after going behind, led 2-1 until second half stoppage time when the Gamba substitute Kazuma Watanabe bobbed up with a late equaliser. They had a better time of it at Cerezo on Sunday night. Yeah, despite being outpossessed to 61% to 39, Grampus returned home with all 3 points. And that game had echoes, actually, of the last game we talked about, Yokohama F. Marinos and FC Tokyo. Yokohama F. Marinos with well over 60% possession. But, yes, FC Tokyo taking home the spoils. And, the same pattern happened in the other away win on Sunday night, Sam, because Gamba Osaka went to Shimizu, were outpossessed 57% to 43, but it was that man Kazuma Watanabe again with his second late strike of the week. This time earned Gamba all 3 points away at S-Pulse. Kosuke Onose had given Gamba the lead 5 minutes before half-time, and Shimizu looked set to claim a first point of the season when Yugo Tatsuta's header drew them level with 6 minutes to go. But that man Watanabe, a mazy dribble along the edge of the box before he pulled the ball back across the keeper and into the far corner to wrap up the win for Gamba. So, Shimizu remain on no points. And, they're just thankful that Kashima are even worse than them at the moment, Sam, that is keeping them off the bottom. But, Gamba, a come-from-behind draw at Nagoya. And then, after being pegged back late on, going on to win the game away at Shimizu, a very productive week for Suniyasu Miyamoto's men.
Yeah, they're showing good resilience, and I think Watanabe getting his two goals kind of shows the depth that Gamba have. So if Adam Ilson and Usami aren't doing it, then they bring on Patrick and Watanabe, and both of those have good quality. And yeah, it was a really well taken goal, actually, the second one, which is a real kick in the teeth for Shimizu, who, after Gamba took the lead early, they really dominated the game, as the possession suggests, and they had a lot of chances, but either Higashiguchi made a good save, or they just fluffed their lines, or the last cross wasn't quite enough. But yeah, once they got back to 1-1 through Tatsuta's header, you hoped for them, I think, that they'd go on and kind of at least get that point, but Gamba just kind of flipped a switch, I think, at 1-1, and yeah, some kind of ropey defending from Shimizu allowed kind of Watanabe to kind of wander through, and the same was for the first goal. They were so open on the counter-attack, and no one was particularly marking anyone, and it was quite simple for Gamba to pass their way through Shimizu. But they're getting a few players back. They've looked better, Shimizu, in every game that they've played this season. And at least going forward, the build-up play is really good, and it's very good to watch, but the end product isn't quite there, and the defending is still definitely a work in progress. But they're getting players back. El Senio made his first appearance of the season. Renato Augusto, he was on the bench. So there's quality coming back for Shimizu, and there are definitely positive signs. As for Gamba, a bit like Reds, I don't think they're playing particularly well, but they're getting results, and that's all you can ask for at this stage of the season.
Yeah, most heavily. So yeah, the three away winners on Sunday night we've covered there: FC Tokyo at Nagoya and Gamba Osaka. That leaves us with four games to cover, Sam, and they were all draws. We'll begin with the 1-1 on Saturday night between Oita and Kobe. Both of those teams were victorious in the week. Kobe claimed a 1-0 away win at Tosu on Wednesday thanks to Douglas's Karate Kid volley in the 75th minute, while Oita, they were in dreamland after coming from behind to score twice from the 85th minute on at home against Hiroshima. Kazushi Mitsuhira getting their winner 4 minutes into stoppage time, and two very well taken goals in this game at the Oita Dome on Saturday night. Kyogo Furashi is probably an understatement to call that well taken. An absolute screamer of a volley from inside the D in the very first minute, but then Tomoki Iwata with a very composed finish at the keeper's near post just before the half hour. That was the end of the scoring, Sam. So the points shared down in Oita between the Vissel and Trinita, and just about a fair result on the run of play?
Just about. I think Furuhashi is now the clubhouse leader for goal of the season. It was such a good volley from, about 20 yards. Only about 16 seconds were played, and really good technique on that. But from then on, I thought Oita were terrific first half. They're really good to watch with their possession football, and they kind of a bit more energy than you're used to seeing necessarily from Oita. They caused a kind of makeshift Kobe team a lot of problems. Obviously, Iniesta wasn't playing, Vermaelen wasn't playing, Dan Clover's out of the back line as well, and it looked it, because, I like watching Kobe defend just because it's a bit of a laughing track. It's just horrendous, and they were the same again first half here, and Oita caused them a lot of problems. They got their goal from a very good piece of officiating, actually, playing the advantage, allowing Iwata to run onto the ball, and a tidy finish from him. But Kobe then, after being on the back foot from the first half, they brought on a few more youngsters as well, and Oda was there, and Sasaki came on, and Goke, they kind of linked really well, and like their play towards the box was very good, but then Oda missed an absolute golden opportunity to score. He'll have nightmares about that just in front of the goal. And then late on, Sasaki had another chance. So, it was just a lack of clinical edge from Kobe cost them the victory in the end. But I think on the balance of play, 1-1 was probably fair.
All right, so that's a slightly controversial call there, Sam. You're taking Furuhashi's goal over Yusuke Murahashi's rocket in the Osaka derby. So that you're officially on record with that call that Furuhashi is the clubhouse leader now?
Yeah, just personal preference. Both are very, very good goals, but there's something about a left-footed volley that I'm quite fond of. And yeah, I'd go with Furuhashi, just taking nothing away from Marahashi's goal.
All right, well, this screams for a Twitter poll, I think. And if I was any good at clipping a video, I would hopefully attach that on to the poll as well. But yeah, that might be coming up for you to vote on, listeners. I'm sure the Marahashi goal is still fresh in your mind. And if you haven't already, check out Kyogo Furuhashi's goal. As Sam said, it came about 16, 17 seconds into the game at Oita on Saturday night. So, be very interested to see what the public say about that and what is their preference for, the early favourite for goal of the season. All right, well, to the other 1-1 draw from the match day then. It was played at Mitsuzawa. Yokohama FC entertained Sendai. Of course, Yokohama FC coming off that remarkable 3-1 away win over Reysol, where they registered a total of four shots over the course of the game. Sendai coming off that home defeat at the hands of Urawa. And, I've already given it away. It was a 1-1 draw. Kazunari Ichimi gave the host the lead 7 minutes before half-time. But then Sendai's Portuguese striker Alexandre Guedes equalised at 12 minutes into the second half past Yokohama FC's sub-keeper Yuta Minami, Sam. After their first-choice goalkeeper Yuji Rokutan was forced off very early doors after a very unfortunate-looking clash.
Yeah, it wasn't nice to see. Hopefully, for Okutan's sake, it's only going to be a broken nose. But yeah, he was sliding in with Shun Nagasawa, and Nagasawa is trying to hook the ball goalwards, but almost like a trailing knee catches Rokutan in the face. It's a nasty collision. He was down for a while before being stretchered off. I have not seen anything definitive on his condition. I think they're not particularly hopeful that he's going to be well enough, especially for this weekend. And I think Shirahira said maybe it might be a long-term absence. So that's unfortunate for him. Hopefully, he can get back and playing well. Because, he's moved to Yokohama after having a tough end of spell at Shimizu. And he's got back to playing in goal, the first-choice goalkeeper. And he'd done really well in the games that he has played. So hopefully this won't be too long of an absence and he'll be back between the sticks for Yokohama.
Most definitely. All right, so anything else to add on this game then? Obviously, Yokohama FC have been a very pleasant surprise through the first four games. And, you could have got very long odds on Yokohama FC ever being above Yokohama F. Marinos in the table at any point of the season. As it is now, they're just a point ahead of their city rivals. But, any thoughts about them perhaps on that win away at Reysol on Wednesday night, or indeed Sendai as well, as you've seen from them so far?
I've been really impressed, actually, with both teams. I think Sendai haven't really got the results. I think against Urawa, they were, as I said earlier, they were probably the better team for large periods. And I think Guedes is a good signing for him. He looks to have that touch of quality. He played in midweek a couple of delightful through balls that Yamada and Akasaki both fluffed their lines with. But I don't think he's really... they're playing him left wing, which I don't think is necessarily the best position for him. But once maybe Cuenca's back and Nishimura's there, they might put Guedes through the middle and play those two either side of him. And that's quite a formidable-looking front three. So I think they're playing better than their results suggest. And as for Yokohama, they've been fantastic to watch, actually. I think the lack of relegation has really given them a freedom, both to the players and the manager, who is selecting younger players. You've not seen the likes of Iba or Leandro or Nakamura too much. Yongapin and Inoue, who started the first game. And it's given chances to younger players, and it's definitely brought about a freedom in the way they play. I think Ichimi is leading the line really well. His goal in this game is a terrific little touch off the chest, takes it out of his feet, and a good finish. And similar to the one against Sapporo last week, where he was really calm in front of goal, and he looks like he might have a very good season. And they're playing really well behind him with this new kind of 3-4-3 formation, I think it is, 3-5-2 maybe. But yeah, him, Koki Saito's looking good. They almost snatched it, actually, at the end, Yokohama. I think it's Keski Sato is adjudged offside, which is very tight when you look at the replay with the trailing leg of Ishihara, the defender. So they could consider themselves unfortunate not to have a second victory in the week. But yeah, I think both teams have really benefited, I think, from the freedom that a lack of relegation has given them. So hopefully they keep that up, although it's disappointing for fans of Kazuyoshi Miura, who is not getting a kick at the moment.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Just looking through the team sheet from Sunday night, yeah, there's really none of the familiar names that you have come to expect, and that they obviously used extensively last year in J2. Some of those veteran names, yeah, they're basically, I don't know whether they were all given the weekend off, or, as you say, some of the exciting young players are definitely being given a chance, and it's, terrific to see. I echo your thoughts on Ichimi's goal, and, obviously, as you say, follows on from his one, against Sapporo. So he's got off to an excellent start. Koki Saito is most definitely a live wire and, one to watch throughout the season. And, more power to Yokohama FC. And I think as all the neutrals will certainly hope that, they show no fear when they rock up to the Nissan Stadium in two match days for the derby, because that promises to be a terrific occasion, especially, if they go there with their tails up. So, positive week, I guess, for them. They will have been disappointed not to win at home and build on that win away at Reysol in the week. But, Yokohama FC doing well through four games. So we've got two nil-nils to finish off with. Whichever one you want to lead off with, Sam, I'm not sure. Well, I'll go with Shonan, the team that play closest to where I live. They were finally able to notch a first point of the season in a nil-nil home draw against Sapporo on Sunday night. Looking at the stats, they're probably disappointed not to have taken all 3 points, Sam, but they might have played better in other games this season and gotten nothing. So I guess you've got to start somewhere. And, Sapporo were coming off a good result by defeating Kashima. So I guess for Shonan, any point will do at this stage to get them up and running.
Yeah, well, you picked the best game out of the two. Definitely this one was a lot more open. I thought both teams had chances. Shonan, as you say, had a couple of decent efforts. They hit the post with one. I think it was Ishihara with his effort. And Sugano in goal has really done well. He stepped up, actually, with Gu leaving. So, and made a few terrific saves in this game and in the rest of the games, midweek and last weekend as well. And Sapporo as well, they came into the game without Musashi Suzuki, who had started the season really well. He got injured after his goal in midweek against Kashima. And then Bothroyd also went off in that game, but they managed to wheel him out for this one. He hit the post, he was quite unlucky with that, and had a couple of half chances with headers. But in the end, I think it was fairly decent defending from Shonan, and they were full value for their points. That was just probably fair in this game. We also got to see Douglas Oliveira, the new Brazilian signing up front for Sapporo. I wouldn't expect to see too much of him in the starting lineup. He didn't come across as the most elegant player, let's say. He had a chance late on where he was running through and looked a bit like Bambi on ice and didn't really get his feet adjusted. So they could definitely do with having Suzuki back. And they also lost Chanatip to an injury at half-time, so they're a little bit of the walking wounded at the moment, Sapporo, to go with the slate of away games that they're having to play. So I think they'd probably take a point and think, yeah, it's probably a decent week for them and a good start to the season. And Shonan, I thought, again, they're a little bit unlucky against Yokohama in midweek to not get a point there. And, I'm glad they got a point here, and it was definitely deserved.
All right, we're just looking through the match report for this game, Sam, before we move on to the last game of the match day. Am I reading anything into the fact that Misha Petrovic made four changes at halftime? As you say, Chanatip was forced off, but there was also Kaneko, Miyazawa and Takamine coming on. So, four changes. Was that a reaction to the way they'd played in the first half, or is that just getting fresh legs on? But it's obviously with five subs at your disposal. I mean, that's, putting a lot of eggs into that halftime basket.
Yeah, it was very interesting the way that all managers have used these subs, and this one especially, because they haven't been at the same level that they were in the previous two games against Yokohama and against Kashima. But I don't think there were four subs at half-time worthy of that. I think maybe it's just for fresh legs, because, they've Yeah, they've played quite tough games, I'd say. Yokohama gave them a really good game. And Nakashima, as bad as they have been, I think they still played quite well against Sapporo. So, yeah, maybe it was a bit of that, but maybe it's just another bit. Because if you're going to have these subs, they're going to break up the flow of the game. So maybe you thought, get them all out of the way at one stage and we can really attack the second half. So I'm not really sure on it. I don't think they played so badly that they needed those four changes. So maybe there are a couple more knocks in there that haven't been seen, and that's going to happen with the way this schedule is.
All right, then. So, yeah, I guess both teams can, leave the BMW Stadium relatively satisfied after Sunday night. Shonan, a first point of the season, and, Sapporo, another point to their tally after a midweek win. Well, it was a frustrating week all around for Hiroshima. As we mentioned early, they blew a late lead away at Oita on Wednesday, and then they were down in Kyushu again to play Tosu, who were yet to score coming into this game, and, they are still yet to score after four match days after it finished at 0-0 at the stadium there in Tosu. Hiroshima, this will just be a missed opportunity, as a Wednesday was, Sam, and, by the sounds of things, this was the game you were at least taken with in match day four.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly great, as all Sagantosu games seem to be. The one thing I can predict correctly on the transfer market predictor is Sagantosu 0, and the rest of it I'm struggling with. But yeah, again, they didn't look like scoring. It's similar to the way they played at the beginning of last season. Was it 8 games they went without scoring at the start of last year? And they're on for that again here. They've got no striker that looks like they're going to score goals. Thiago Alves and Koyamatsu out wide look like they're able to create things, but I don't think anyone's going to take them at the moment. And then Sanfrecce, it wasn't great from them. They made a couple of changes which maybe disrupted them. And after the loss to Oita, where it was a little bit smash and grab at the end from Oita, but they're two teams, Oita and Tosu, that aren't really suited to the way Hiroshima play, that they won't want to play against teams that are going to just sit back and kind of play them at their own game. And when Hiroshima have to come forward and dictate the play, it's not really the way that they want to go about it. And they struggled to break down Tosu, who, for all their flaws, are a fairly decent defensive unit. They are well organised. I think their midfield three is really well. It's not quality, but it works really hard. It's workmanlike, and it gets around and makes life uncomfortable for the opposition midfield. And their defence really is pretty solid. So, yeah, Hiroshima really struggled to break that down. They had one glorious chance at the end with Douglas Vieira, who, I mean, he has to score one-on-one, and he put it wide and by quite a comfortable margin as well. And that, it's two pretty poor teams on the day, and Hiroshima, ever since we picked them up last week, have gone on a terrible run. So hopefully for them that the J-Talk jinx ends after this week.
Yes, indeed. Apologies to all Sanfrecce supporters for that. But that is, match day four wrapped up. And indeed, hopefully we've touched on all the results from match day three as well in enough detail as you needed, listeners. So, there's no midweek games in J1 this week. So next Saturday, we have match day five being played with two clashes between current top six teams. Of course, the table can change rapidly in the course of one match day. FC Tokyo hosting Urawa and Hiroshima entertaining Cerezo Osaka. With Yokohama FC hosting Kawasaki in a Kanagawa derby, as we mentioned with Neil. While two giants off to underwhelming starts, Kashima and Yokohama F Marinos will lock horns at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Elsewhere, Shimizu will look to move off Nilpwa when they visit Kobe. Tosu will hope to score their first goal of the season at Nagoya. Gumba Osaka host Oita, Sendai host Sapporo, and Shonan travel to Kashiwa. All right then, Sam. Well, no midweek games will make your workload a little bit easier this week, so I'm sure you're thankful for that. And, we'll look forward to meeting again early next week to chat about all that's gone on in match day five.
Yeah, looking forward to a little bit of a break, although I am dipping my toe into J2 on Wednesday just to help them out there. But, yeah, it should be an easier week, and I'm looking forward to next weekend's fixtures.
All right, then. Well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. We'd like to thank Neil Debnam and Stuart Woodward for their time, Sean Galbraith too, of course. And, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up all of the Match Day 5 clashes. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.